Hello and welcome to the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast, focusing on linking business with grassroots sport. My name's David Waldridge, and this week I'll be speaking with Mary Thomas from Concise Training, one of our elite champions at Koi Sports, and the grassroots organisation that she's decided to invest in, Swindon Lightning Cheerleading Club. It'll be really interesting to hear from an organisation within sport that doesn't often get highlighted enough. So, without further delay, let's get started on the latest episode of the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast.
So, I set Concise Training up in 2008. I had a background in IT and training and wanted to work myself. So I set up initially actually as a Microsoft Office trainer, but in 2009 I couldn't go networking for various reasons and started to explore social media and realised the opportunity. I mean, at the time it was just Twitter really, that was all people were using, but the social proof and the reach you could get from Twitter at the time was fantastic. So I started teaching businesses to use social media. In 2012, I wrote a book, Social Media Made Simple, and I also created the first City and Guilds qualification in social media. And in 2013, we were asked by City and Guilds to create two more qualifications. So we created all of the units and criteria for diplomas in social media and digital marketing. So we've created e-learning courses that are licensed by Pittman Training Group, and we have been updating those since 2013, so we update those every 6 months. And in 2012, we actually set up an agency, so we set up Concise Digital, where we practice what we preach. So now we train in WordPress website, search engine optimization, all the social channels, so Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We also do video and images and general marketing. So we do all of that on our digital channels.
Really impressive. So you hit the social media market in its infancy, really, just as it was about to come of age in the late noughties.
Yeah, that's right. Back in 2009, I ran my first Twitter workshop, and you couldn't do images. You couldn't, and video was just unheard of. It was all text. It's amazing how much it's changed.
I imagine with teaching social media, you are constantly coaching yourself too, as it's a format that's always evolving and changing. Is that quite a challenge for your business?
Massive. Yes. Yeah, so as I said, we've got about 13 e-learning courses now, and we update our e-learning courses and all our webinars every 6 months. And it's a massive, massive undertaking because some of the channels completely change. So we've just gone through that process now. The Instagram course has been completely rewritten. The Facebook course was completely rewritten. And the LinkedIn course was completely rewritten. The Twitter course was about 50% rewritten. And the same for all the other courses. So, yeah, massive undertaking. Sometimes I regret, and my team definitely regret, ever saying that we'd do that. But it's important to me because I want people to get the most up-to-date information they can.
Now, you mentioned you have an agency as well. What exactly does that involve?
So our agency, we do WordPress websites, optimized WordPress websites, and then we train clients to use those websites and maintain them themselves. We would either completely manage social media for a client in some cases, or we'll manage it in conjunction with the client. And then similarly, we can do digital advertising. We also do blog posts. We create images, videos, that sort of thing. So we very much have that flexible approach where one client, we manage their social media, but alongside that, we also trained one of their members of staff, and their member of staff took over when they were ready.
Is it important to have that flexibility? As I imagine, different types of business work better on different types of social media.
Oh, absolutely. The social media channel somebody uses is really important to understand their aims and their audience and what content they can create. I have a philosophy that you use a few social media channels very well rather than lots of channels in a not so well way. Different businesses work with agencies in different ways. For some businesses, it's really important to get up-to-date information out like right now. So this has happened in the business and I have to get it out today. And that doesn't tend to work with an agency approach because the best will in the world, we're managing a number of clients and we can't guarantee that we'll be able to respond that day. And so in those cases, it's much better that the client has the training to be able to do that immediate update themselves. But perhaps we will do the more scheduled, more chilled updates for them.
Does it help if a client not only trains with you, but also uses your agency as well? Because then surely that assists them in their consistency online as a brand and with their messaging too.
Absolutely, yeah. We understand the business and we understand their brand voice. And that brand voice is really important. Not only is it a brand voice in terms of imagery and making sure that their brand is on everything that they do and can be easily recognisable, but it's also making sure that we use the right language, which again is different for every client.
Going back to training for a moment, would you take a business from having no social media or online presence to becoming into a fully functioning online brand? And what types of training do you give? Is it all distance learning, workshop based, or based in one location?
We have a number of options for training. So we have a number of e-learning courses. People can just take in their own time and they can work through them. So say our LinkedIn one is like 18 hours of learning. And it'll take you through what is LinkedIn all the way to doing advertising and everything in between. And we cover the hows as well as the whys. We also do like a coaching. So I do one-to-one coaching with people where we meet on a regular basis and we work through what they want to work through. And that can be done as an individual or as a group. We also do general webinars, public webinars that people can come along and attend. And then we have our City and Guilds qualifications. So these aren't for everybody, but they take you through from an absolute beginner to be able to set up your own business as or join a company as a social media or digital marketing consultant. Qualifications are over 15 months or 12 months. They are distance learning, so a combination of the e-learning courses and live webinars. They have assignment based. It's not an exam. We don't believe that this should be a memory test. So it's all about practical assignments and implementing what you've learned. And then you get unlimited feedback and support from your tutors. So those are courses for people who really want to make a career change, or perhaps they're doing a little bit of social media, they're dabbling a little bit, and they really want to be able to offer it as a service. So many of our graduates have gone on to sort of set up successful businesses as digital consultants, either around the country or around the world, to get a flexible career for themselves.
Is that how you measure your achievements as a company then, seeing how your clients succeed from the agency side of things, but also seeing those build their own careers from the training that you've given them?
Yeah, absolutely. I love being able to help our graduates go on to either get a job or getting clients. You know, yeah, it's fantastic to see they're earning money, creating that flexible career around the kids or whatever they want to do. Definitely one of the ways we measure. And obviously on the agency side, the other way we measure is having our businesses become successful.
Now, as a social media expert, I'm really keen to get your thoughts, Mary, on what are the upcoming trends that we should be looking out for on social media? What are the upcoming game changers going
to
be?
Video is continuing to be really important. I read a stat the other day that said that LinkedIn live video, which actually isn't available to everybody, but the use of it gone up 87% over the last year. Having that personal approach, I think, is going to be really important going forward. So having that person behind the brand is going to be quite interesting. I think some of the bigger brands are potentially going to suffer or struggle with doing that. Having something that perhaps isn't professionally done, if you like. It's got to be professionally done, but in a more informal way. I think that's going to be quite important because, again, that brings out the personality of what's going on. And the big change is going to be during 2021, how you're going to be able to remarket, because a lot of the browsers are going to disrupt the whole cookie thing going on. And so it's going to be really difficult to remarket to people. So it's going to be interesting to see how certainly some of the big brands deal with that in 2021.
So you want to see more genuineness from brands and how they react to the cookie format changes.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't know who's got visited your website, or you won't be able to know who's visited your website in the next few months. So that's going to be a bit of a game changer as to how people are going to market.
We now switch from an online format to a Sunday morning in a muddy field or a hot and sweaty gym on a Wednesday night. How important is grassroots sport from a business perspective?
CSR is something that we've always been involved in, and sport is something that my children were very involved in when they were growing up, and I think it's incredibly important to get teamwork and individual success and, you know, getting out and doing some exercise and mental health. And I think businesses should engage with it, not necessarily from a sponsorship point of view, but a sponsorship point of view is good, but I think businesses should engage with it just to give something back to society. That's my personal opinion.
Mary, it's amazing to have you joining the Koi Sports Network as an elite champion, sharing our passion for social change through sport. You've chosen to invest in a cheerleading club. Why this organisation in particular?
Yes, so Swindon Lightning. So when I had the opportunity to invest in a grassroots sport in this way, I decided that rather than investing in a club that my children had done in the past but weren't doing anymore, I wanted to give the opportunity for my staff to benefit from this as well. So one of my members of staff, her daughter is a member of the Swindon Lightning Club and has got a lot out of being a member over the years, both from a physical point of view, but also from a mental health point of view and teamwork and that sort of thing. So this is why we nominated as a company Swindon Lightning.
And finally, Mary, where can we find out more about Concise Training and the Concise Agency?
My social media handles are Concise Training and Concise Digital. My website's concisetraining.net and concisedigital.net.
That was Mary Thomas from Concise Training, one of our elite champions at Koi Sports. Find out more about how to get involved with Koi Sports and support us in helping to sustain, enhance and grow the grassroots sports sector, promoting a true sport for all culture. Head over to our website, koisports.co.uk. Now let's hear from the organisation Mary has decided to invest in through Koi Sports as an elite champion, Millie Little from Swindon Lightning Cheerleading Club.
Hi Dave, it's great to be here. So I started Swindon Lightning back in 2011. I'd just finished my university degree in sports science and coaching, came back home and really missed doing cheer because I'd been on a cheer team at university. I was one of those children that are always upside down, full of energy, and I'd always loved gymnastics. I was always making up dances, and it just felt like it was the right thing for me to be doing. I loved competing and I loved being on my university team. So I came home and started researching how to set up a team, and we started off, you know, using sports halls, at times just using squash courts and like just very thin mats, etc., and starting off with just a few girls that were maybe a bit older in the junior sort of age category. And then we've grown, and each season we've gained more athletes, we've won more competitions, we've grown and we've moved venues. So now we're really lucky to have our own gym, and I'm really grateful for it. But what I'm finding now is that we are also outgrowing this gym, which is a nice problem to have. We're run by volunteers. It can be really difficult to get funding because cheerleading isn't always what people think it is. So it is hard sometimes to get that recognition to be identified as a sport and for people to understand what we do and what we do for the community.
So what are the aims and objectives of Swindon Lightning? You mentioned how the club has grown. Did you set out for that success, or was it all about the community?
I don't think I realised in the beginning, being maybe a bit young and naive, about how many hats I would need to wear to run a programme, an entire club. So luckily, you know, I've got on board some fantastic extra coaches and committee who have really supported us. And then we do have our elite teams who I'm really trying to push onto the next level so that we can compete in the highest competitions. But I'm also a real champion for the grassroots and the beginning teams because I want any child that comes into our club to have a place, to have somewhere that they can shine. One of my main objectives for last season was that I really wanted an inclusive team. By day, I'm a special needs teacher, and I'd set up a special needs cheerleading club at school, which was incredible, and I loved it so much, and I learned so much. But some of those girls then wanted to come to our club, and I wasn't really sure where best to fit them in safely. So we developed what we called a unified team. We got to training. It was fantastic. We took them to competition, and it was just such a heartwarming experience, and the recognition of what those athletes did was just fantastic for the club and something really, a really proud moment for the team.
I think it's amazing that you have such a variation of teams. Would you say that the inclusion and togetherness of these young people is arguably more important at those earlier stages rather than pushing on to that next level?
Yeah, I mean, they start their journey with us at like a recreational class called Cheer for Fun, and then they progress and we take note of their strengths and their skills, and we aim to find what's best for them and help them to shine. So within a routine, you'll have certain sections. So you have your stunt section, jumps, pyramids, tumbles, and dance is all choreographed. So each child might have, you know, a particular strength in that area. And then even within the stunt section, you've got your back spots, who are generally the tallest, the strongest, the most reliable. You've got your bases, who work together to keep the stunt up in the air. And then you've got your flyer who needs to be strong and flexible. And again, they all need to be reliable to enable those stunts to hit. So there's lots of combinations to consider when you're not just placing a child, but fitting a team together and making sure those dynamics work. But, you know, we get them through the door, they work hard, that's what we ask for. We don't expect anybody to come in with previous experience. We just ask for a positive attitude and a give it a go mentality. And then that's how we create success.
In a way, a cheerleading squad has almost more values of teamwork than any other sport, really, because of all the different combinations, roles, and the need for everyone to apply themselves to produce an end product.
Yeah, definitely. You know, if you've got your stunt group of four and one of you is missing, then that stunt can't go up for that evening. So training competitive teams, you know, they do have a large commitment to make. We've got preparation teams and we've got recreational teams. So we make sure that they commit to what's right for them, for that family. There's no pressure to move on. There's a place for everybody. But yeah, we do have very high expectations for our competitive teams because we like to win.
Well, it's always important to have that hunger to win, but you said something important there. You said that we're doing this for everybody. Everybody can be involved, and that's important within cheerleading, especially because there are those negative stereotypes surrounding the sport, which are false.
It is a constant battle, again, not just for our own dignity and integrity, but even things like funding. You know, we get denied funding so often, purely because people don't understand what our sport is really about. Again, things like people do just instantly think of the pom dance side of it. Now, pom cheer is another side of cheer. It's not the cheer that we do at our club, but it is a style of cheer in its own right. So it's kind of could do with maybe being named differently so that people understand that there is a difference. Pom dance is fantastic. And we did have a coach who came in and was doing pom for us, and she's now gone on to other things. We support her completely. And we were very happy to have that side of our club, because then it meant that if somebody wasn't really into the stunting side of things, that there was a more dance version that they could go and be part of. So my club, we don't have pom-poms because we are too busy throwing girls up in the air and catching them safely. Again, with the outfits, we are incredibly mindful of our outfits, and the rules have changed about what you are and aren't allowed to wear within competitive cheerleading. They go through a very rigorous standards and testing before we would even consider buying or purchasing new outfits. So our training kit, they have to wear official uniform, they have to have their bow in, they need to know what it feels like on competition day. And their competition outfits are very modest, but look incredible with all the sparkles and all the glitter out on the competitive mats. Again, we've had some inappropriate requests for things like stag do's. I mainly work with children. We did have an adult team briefly, but that's not appropriate for child athletes. I would say it's mostly similar to something like a group acrobatics performance is what it's most akin to. So it's not really appropriate to be having those kind of requests and fighting that type of stereotype.
Wow, I'm actually shocked that you even had that kind of request before. Whilst on the subject of stereotypes, cheerleading is often seen as a girls' sport, a girls' thing to do. And that's not right either.
No, definitely not. If you look at your high level teams within the UK, you'll find that there's at least 12 boys on the squads, and you need to have the co-ed categories that you train for. So you'd need, you know, a certain amount of males on that team, depending on which division you're competing in. So it's definitely not just for girls. And if you ever get a chance to watch any of the incredible videos where they're doing, you know, single base stunting, it's amazing athleticism, and the males are very toned and strong, and they lift the girls up by themselves, and then they're also incredible tumblers. They're usually front and center for the jumps. Boys do make a real difference. In my squad currently, we don't have any boys, but that isn't because we haven't tried to encourage boys to come along. Again, we're fighting a stereotype. But then at the same time, I find with my girls, rather than get upset that we don't have, you know, the additional strength of boys, we focus on perfect technique and just champion our teamwork to make those stunts hit. And we're proud that we can achieve those stunts without having the boys, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine it increases the togetherness of the team.
Yeah, the girls are incredibly supportive of each other. I mean, I love nothing more than just taking casual videos at training, because you can see them genuinely cheering each other on, and they know that a positive mindset is going to, you know, enhance their training. We've talked a lot about that type of thing. And they're just a pleasure to be around. You know, they're hungry for it. They want it. They work incredibly hard. You know, it is important for their friendships, for their mental health, and it teaches them accountability. I think what we do is so understated, unfortunately, but all those little gems that I get to see at training, I'm really proud to be a part of.
Would you say that's how you measure the success of Swindon Lightning, because of the mental health aspects that you've championed and developed, the accountability of your athletes and that ethos that you've built through the organisation? Is that the biggest success, or is it about winning competitions, winning trophies? Where do you set that bar as head coach and owner?
I definitely think that they tie together. So, I mean, I've had some girls for 7, 8, one of them 9 years, and they've been through this whole process with us. And we give them extra challenges. We've trained them up to be junior coaches. I've got over 9 junior coaches now that support me each day with training. You know, they do need to turn up to their training sessions. They do need to be prepared to coach certain aspects of that team. I think where it's obvious that we genuinely care, having a slightly smaller club to some of the other teams, I do know every child that is in my programme by first name. And I think that goes a long way to reassure parents that we really do care about these athletes, no matter if they're starting out in the prep team or all the way up to our highest level teams. So along this process, you know, the friendships and the bonds that they make really help to strengthen their confidence and their self-assuredness to then go on to be good all-rounded human beings. I do think that having somewhere to be and having that responsibility does promote positive mental health and accountability in young people.
What are the challenges that your organisation faces? You mentioned parents just then. Now, I've seen how high these cheerleaders get chucked in the air. I imagine that can sometimes be a health and safety concern from parents at times. Can that be a challenge in itself?
Usually, I like to think that parents understand what they're signing up their child for. We have had the odd, you know, shocked parent who then, you know, is very proud of what that child has achieved, but it has come maybe as a bit of a shock once or twice. But yeah, like, you know, on a Saturday morning, parents are handing over their little 5-year-olds, and I would like them to know that they're in a safe and supportive environment. The biggest challenge, again, I think, is fighting that stereotype to get funding. I mean, I genuinely believe that our athletes deserve the best premises, the best facilities that we can possibly give them. And at the minute, things like our roof has been leaking for over a year. We had to wait for a year and a half to fundraise enough money to get a sprung floor. There's equipment that they could definitely be benefiting from, but we just can't afford it at the moment. So those avenues to funding and fundraising are quite limited. And it does make me feel sad that I'm not giving them the best that they could have, but I know that I give them the best of me. So I try and remind myself that.
And now you have investment from Concise Training through Koi Sports. You've highlighted just how far funding can go. But what will it mean to you and your young athletes?
I mean, any funding is so, so appreciated. And just knowing that people have thought of us as well really warms my heart. I know the girls will be incredibly grateful. They understand how hard it is to raise money. Even just a small amount of money, we can then buy some leaflets. I can go into a school and do a presentation. And if I could hand out leaflets to every child at that school, that's going to help get our name out there, get our brand out there. Even if that child doesn't like it for themselves, they might have a friend or a sibling that does. So just getting ourselves, I think, more established, more well-known within the community is really going to build our profile and, you know, help promote the grass sports and help with the, you know, the financial side of things so that we can afford to get to a bigger gym and we can afford that extra equipment and training that we need.
Before you go, Millie, what does the future look like for Swindon Lightning?
So our next goals are to get back into the gym safely, to get back to full training, so with the stunts, with the social distancing. And then our girls are currently level 3. We need to get to level 5 to go to the World Championships. So this year we were supposed to be training level 4, so we might be set back a year possibly. So hopefully we can get back on track with where we need to be. I need to get the unified team back up and running. I really miss having that side of the club. And then we really need to find a bigger venue because our girls are outgrowing our current gym size.
It's truly been incredible to hear the passion that you have, Millie. Where can people find out more about Swindon Lightning Cheerleading Club?
We're all over Facebook and Instagram at Swindon Lightning Cheerleading. And we've got a beautiful website, which was made by the organisation from Concise, at swindonlightning.com.
And that's it for this episode of the Coy Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast. Thank you to our guests, Mary Thomas from Concise Training and Millie Little of Swindon Lightning Cheerleading Club. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you for listening. If you do have a spare 5 minutes, you might be interested in finding out more about the other projects that Coy Sports are currently working on. Head over to our website, coysports.co.uk, or search for us on social media. And don't forget to subscribe and download to our podcast series. And we'll hear more from the business and grassroots sports sector next time.